And welcome to episode 17 of the Road to Change podcast. My name is Matthew McVarish, and I am the European Ambassador for the organisation Stop the Silence, Stop Child Sexual Abuse. You're listening to episode 17 of the Road to Change podcast, the anniversary episode of the 10,000 mile walk to stop the silence and stop child sexual abuse. We're here in, what are we? Sicily.
Sicily, yeah.
Country 23. And I'm here in Yvonne, our trusty follow vehicle, with Stiglo MacIver.
Finally.
And Jacko.
Hello.
Who is here with us. Yeah. He's our, you remind me of Bruce Lee. I'm not sure why.
Bruce Lee. Yeah. I get that a lot, actually.
Do you?
Yeah, honestly. Okay.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the podcast, if you're a regular listener. If you're a new listener, hello. We're walking around Europe to try and address child sexual abuse, and today is exactly 1 year since I started walking. And I promise you that is the weirdest feeling I've ever experienced in my life.
Yeah, I've been on the road for 8 months now, and it's still crazy.
8 months, Stiglo.
It's gone so fast, you know, it's crazy.
Has it gone fast?
Yeah.
Can you not remember, like, the past? I mean, how many countries have you done? This is 23 for me.
I think it must be, like, 11 now, just because you went to two more. It was 10. Yeah, you were 10 above me. Then you went to two more, so 11.
That's right.
12.
So I left you in Athens and I've rejoined you in
Sicily. Yeah, finally. So yeah, we're back on track and had a great hug yesterday. So
well, I mean, like, we left you in Athens. Amanda and I flew. I walked to the airport in Athens. I flew to Cyprus. I walked from the airport in Cyprus to Nicosia. Spent a week doing events there and then walked back to the airport and then flew to Malta. And then walked from the airport in Malta to Valletta, and it's been pretty much one of the two most successful cities of the Road to Change, those two islands. But last night we walked onto the boat in Malta, and we walked off the boat here in Sicily, and it's beautiful. I can't say it's not beautiful here.
It's beautiful.
It's tricky, because we don't have much phone signal here.
Yeah.
And it's going to take me probably 5 or 6 days to walk across Sicily.
I think it's 5 days.
5 days?
Yeah.
Yeah, so... So here we are, guys.
Here we are. Yep.
And it's, I can't tell you how bizarre I feel today. I just feel strange. We did a little video of, you know, the highlights of the past year, and it wasn't even the highlights. It was just random moments of me on the road.
It was a great clip, great video. So.
But I realised as I was editing that together, like, we don't have footage of me speaking to all these governments, and we don't have, you know, you can't show a video of me in newspapers. How do you do that? I suppose I could show a screenshot of me on a website or something, but. Yeah, it's been a successful year, we have to say.
And, oh, absolutely, yeah.
But entirely thanks to you guys, you folk who follow the Road to Change and support the Road to Change. I do feel I'm consciously trying to articulate that I'm the guy that's walking, but this project and this change that we're creating across Europe is entirely thanks to everyone. There's thousands of people involved in Road to Change, and that includes everyone who listens to the podcast and everyone who donates. Every single penny has gone to our efforts here to raise awareness and help prevent child sexual abuse.
Yeah.
So, Stiglo, how do you feel?
I feel good now. Well, I haven't really been on the road for a year now, but it's still a good day. But it was a bit strange to be on the road without you for 2 weeks, and be.
Well, you did an important job. Yvonne, had to get from Athens to Sicily, where I rejoined the walk.
But, I mean, we got robbed and we didn't have any money, so we had to sit still. And I'm not used to sitting still.
Yeah, we travel. Yeah. We normally go 50 kilometres a day. So
so that was a bit strange. But it was good to have a wee bit of a vacation, so to say.
I've just had a bit of fun, despite all the robbings and poverty.
No, it's been
good.
It's been good. It's been really good. But I'm just looking forward to getting back on the road again.
On
the road again.
Well, I have to say, like, it's crazy to be sitting here today knowing that, I mean, it was nearly, 3 years ago I came up with this idea. I'm going to walk around Europe. I'm going to speak to governments. I'm going to speak to newspapers. I'm going to talk about this issue. And I'm quite humbled by the fact that so many people came out of nowhere.
Yeah, so many people behind us.
So many people that I've never met before that I now know in so many countries, and they've come forward to support this effort to try and make children safer and also to give a voice to the 100 million victims in Europe who are, you know, have been sexually victimised. I'm proud of everyone who's been brave enough to stand behind the word child sexual abuse, because that's the problem in it. Obviously, I'm the ambassador for Stop the Silence, Stop Child Sexual Abuse, and that is still a scary phrase for people to even say.
Yeah, you know. I think so. I'm so used to it now. So I don't,
yeah, exactly, I don't, because I don't, it's not a problem. It's like seeing cancer. It's like seeing, you know, it's just any of these things that happen in life.
That's what we need to aim for.
Exactly. Make it a normal thing to say. So I think this, because it's the 1 year anniversary episode, we did a special interview with one of my oldest, bestest friends, Rachel Allen Ringham. I've known her for so long. Her name's she's now married, of course. So, but when I first met you, Bob, it was way back when I was 17 years old. I was a teenager. I'd never told anyone that I was sexually abused, and Chabob came out of the woodwork. I met her in a place where I was working when I was a teenager, and she guided me in my recovery. She got me into counselling, and she basically started me on the road to recovery through her compassion and the fact that she didn't panic when I told her that I'd been sexually abused. And Chabob, she flew all the way to Malta with her family. She brought out new flyers that we needed that my brother Mojo
printed.
Yeah, and the walking poles that got stole in Bulgaria. Mojo, my brother, looked online to get those replaced. Granny Wendy and a couple other people donated money to pay for them. So we now have walking poles, so I'll be able to make it all the way to Rome at my old pace that I used to be able to do, about 7 kilometres an hour. So Chabob brought those out. So she met us in Malta.
It's a shame that I missed her.
You'll meet her when I get to the UK in December. Yeah. You'll meet Chabob, and we'll hopefully spend Christmas with Chabob in Bath. But she was there in Malta with Mandy Bobs and I for the week that we did all the press and stuff there. So I did a special interview with Chabob, which you'll hear shortly, just talking about everything, as you'll hear. But I just want to thank so many people for the fact that we're sitting here in Sicily and that we're still on the road to change. Obviously, as you probably know, we have no commercial support. We approached over 200 UK companies trying to get support. I've approached the people in Finland who make the shoes that I wear. The shoes that I wear have been on TV in pretty much every country for the past 12 countries. Yeah. They're getting free international advertising off those boots that I wear. And I've approached them and asked them for some free boots, because, to be honest, it's going to cost me €600 in boots to get all the way back to Edinburgh.
That's 600 euros that we don't have.
600 euros is a lot of food, you know, because we're supposed to eat a lot.
And petrol.
Diesel to follow me there. So there's that. But, I mean, there's so many people involved in this project. The thing that frightens me is if I start to thank people, because it's such a long list of people, I'll probably
miss someone out
who won't get the thanks that they deserve for what they've done for us, and I would hate to think that. So but there's a couple of obvious people. Dr. Pamela Pine, who's the founder and CEO of Stop the Silence, invited me to be the European ambassador for their organisation, which basically was the gave me the idea. Like, I need to stop the silence in Europe. How do I do that? That was the genesis of this project. And Dr. Pine has been, you know, she's been involved from the start, and she's still involved, and she's over there just next to Washington. She's working. Anytime I go into a government meeting or speak to the press in all these countries, the information that I provide, other than when I'm talking about having been sexually abused by my uncle, if I'm talking about, you know, what we understand of you know, 1 in 4 girls, 1 in 6 boys, or the neurological impact, all those kind of things, Dr. Pamela Pine has a PhD in international public health communication. So she provides that information that I've studied and that I'm recounting. So that's where that comes from. So Stop the Silence, of course, and Dr. Pine they're a huge part of the road to change, of course. And there's also the Moira Anderson Foundation in Edinburgh. Their founder, Sandra Brown, she partners with Stop the Silence to help create the road to change. Yeah. Also, her staff have been amazing. You know, there's so many of them that I'm scared to name one, but Colin, obviously. And Lee, you know, and Sheena, all the guys in the office who, when we call up and say, we need help, the money's not come through yet, or the phones aren't working, what's going on? And they're an organisation.
Yeah, they drop everything.
They drop everything and help us out, you know, and they're an organisation set up in Airdrie, between Edinburgh and Glasgow. They help victims and families who are affected by child sexual abuse. and they're supporting the financial side of, they're not giving us money. They do give us money sometimes, but they're kind of hosting the money that people donate to Road to Change, so that's incredible. There's obviously Dr. Ariel King of the Ariel Foundation. She's just outside Geneva. She's helping us reach the UN. She also came out. Ariel drove the follow-up that Yvonne that I'm in. She drove it from Amsterdam to Berlin to continue the walk on that. So she's been on the ground helping the project, as well as the way that she helps it in a big international reach way. And Homaira Sele, there's the Innocence in Danger, who are an incredible organisation. So all four organisations working together to give us the backing in order to do what we're doing here on the ground in Europe. But of course, Stiggle MacGyver, you are here, you're driving the van, you're making the cups of tea when we have gas to make cups of tea.
We don't have that today, though.
We don't have that today. We've run out of gas and we can't buy any more because we've no money. We've got Mandy Bobbs, Amanda Stewart-Thompson, who has been on the road now. She's been with me in the project for 2 years, but she has been on the road since Poland.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, she was working at the office in Glasgow, donated by Fleet Alliance, Martin Brown and the lovely guys back in Glasgow who donated an office so Amanda and I could put together this project. Mandy Bobbs and Stiggle are working tirelessly. So it's not fair that people, congratulate me for the Road to Change when actually it's three of us. I'm the guy walking, but these guys are here helping me walk. The fourth member of the Road to Change team, my brother Mojo. Mojo is the logistics guy. He's back in Glasgow.
Yeah, and, it's amazing.
There's very few details of the Road to Change that Mojo hasn't created or fixed. Yeah. You know what I mean? The flyers that people read, the website, anytime we're like, oh my goodness, we need this.
We
need the expander foam to stop the roof leaking. And we text Mojo, and Mojo's in Glasgow. We are in rural Austria, and he'll find out where we need to go to get that stuff. I mean, the flights to the islands, the boats from here to there, Mojo has organised all of that. And the change that Road to Change creates, he is as much a part of creating that as everyone else.
Yeah. When I meet him he might be coming out to Spain, doesn't he? Yeah. So, if he's not, I'm going to give him a big hug.
A big hug for Mojo. He was the first driver.
Yeah.
Then there's the drivers. Mojo was the first driver. He followed me and Yvonne all the way through the first five countries to Amsterdam. Then it was Dr. King, Ariel King, and then it was Ashton. Ashton was a volunteer. I met her in Berlin. She's from America. She's not on Facebook, so I'm going to have to email her a big thank you. The next one was Ali Ballybee. He followed us in the van from Copenhagen to Stockholm.
Yeah, I'll finally meet him soon as well.
Yeah. And Ali not only followed me in the van, Ali did all the cooking, all the stuff that you do now, Stiggle, but he also raised a whole lot of money and awareness for Road to Change. He helped us get into the newspapers in Sweden and stuff, and Ali has been a continued amazing support. And then after Ali was you, Stiggle. So that's the five drivers.
Yeah.
Mojo came back out to
when I was sick there,
There's my brother Roddy
He just dropped everything, he just helped out.
He dropped everything, came out because you were not well, you needed to rest. My brother Roddy then came to Romania and walked with me to Bulgaria. Roddy raised a load of money. There's my brother Eddie, the van that we were sitting in, my brother Eddie found this van because 10 days before I was to start last year, we still hadn't found a follow vehicle, and Eddie found this van. We wouldn't be here without Eddie and Roddy and Mojo, and also my mum and dad and my brother Anton all put in money to pay for this van that we're sitting in. So, and we still need to pay them back, but they put up the money, the cash, to pay for the vehicle so we could do this project. So thank you to all of them. And both my sisters, May, who's recently had a baby, Lily, that I'll meet when I get back, who'll be 10 months old.
Yeah.
And my sister Libby in Sligo, and they've all donated money and raised awareness and helped and supported us. And I feel so humbled and grateful that as a survivor and as someone who wanted to address child sexual abuse, my family stood behind me with a complete understanding of why I'm saying these things and what happened to me with her uncle. They got behind me. And actually, all of my mum's family and all of my cousins who are on Facebook get in touch and send me messages of support, and I genuinely, every time I see them, I deeply appreciate them, and I know how hard it is to talk about this issue, especially when you understand the people involved. So I'm so grateful for all of that. But then it gets into when we arrived in every country, there was people in every city who were so kind.
Yeah.
And there's 20.
So such a long list.
23 wow. countries yeah. with an endless list of wonderful, wonderful people.
We can't just say one.
Exactly. Yeah, so let me just say the countries, and if you're listening to this and you're in that country, you know I'm talking about you because I'm thinking of you in my head. So we first arrived in France, and lovely people in France, and then Luxembourg. I feel like I made a family in Luxembourg, and I can't wait to get back there to visit you guys. And then where did I go? Brussels. And then Amsterdam. I've got pals. Oh, goodness me, I can't wait to get back to see you guys. And then Berlin, I'll be there again. I'll see you and we'll celebrate. And then Denmark. And the support from Denmark has been constant.
Mm.
You know who you are if you're listening to this.
Yep.
And recently, even donating more money as I go. And then Sweden. And I feel, again, another family in Sweden that I've made. Helsinki, Finland, amazing. And in all of these places, the British Embassy as well, and the British Ambassador, not just
the Estonia,
survivors and NGOs.
That was great.
And Estonia, that was the next one.
Almost died, eh?
Almost died. Yeah. And Chris Holtby, His Majesty's Ambassador, Her Majesty's Ambassador, Chris Holtby, in Estonia, and all the NGOs we met there, and then Latvia. Awesome. And the funky hostel that we're allowed to stay in for a week for free. And then Lithuania.
Mm-hmm.
You know Rasa, mm-hmm. and the children in need there, and the wonderful, wonderful kids at the children's home that we met in Lithuania, and they stay in regular contact on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And they raised €5.
Yeah.
At Christmas time, they sent me a card and gave us €5 to the Road to Change. That blew me away. I had to lie in the bath weeping for 2 hours because of that. And then Prague, lovely people in Prague, and then my mates in Vienna, and there were. Bratislava,
yeah.
Bratislava, again, you know who you are in Bratislava. You supported us, and you're now in the European Parliament, so we'll be back in touch. And then Hungary, of course, my gorgeous boyfriend who I met in Hungary. And then where did we go after that? Romania?
Romania.
It was Bucharest.
Yeah.
And then Bulgaria. In Bulgaria, we met the government as usual. And then we got to Athens.
Athens was magic.
Athens was the relations of Ali. I know that if you're listening to this, it's a long list of countries and people. But if you're the people we're talking about, I'm sure it'll be slightly more exciting. But Julie and Yanni and Luca and Dimitri, who basically invited us into their home and gave us a place to be.
And Jack and I never said thank you for fixing the van. And it was so thank you so much for
it was
that.
So kind and so it's so difficult when you're on the road to get simple things mm-hmm. fixed and also just to for me like to eat for a week that amount of food. Julie and Yanni, you're angels and we really appreciate everything you did for us. And
I'll be back to Athens.
We will be. I want to go back with Ali next year. Ali, the follow driver for Sweden, who is the nephew of Julie and Yanni. And then there was the islands, and you know, That's just been what a whirlwind, what a crazy year it's been. But I'm so exhausted and relieved to think that there are so many people. I got contacted by 3 different survivors this week, literally in 3 different countries, who have gave me such kind words of compassion and told me how that the Road to Change has inspired them and their lives and their journey to recovery. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
It's all about, I mean, there's 2 things and they're equal. One of them's about child protection. It's about coming forward and speaking about it so children are made safer, because the words and the information you have to tell the police and to tell the public, that information can save children's lives. And also for your own, if you are someone who's been sexually abused, we're walking so that you understand, so that you can hear that what happened to you, first of all, that was not your fault. And that should never have happened to you. And you did nothing to deserve what happened to you. And also so that you understand that that was a crime that happened to you. And the person who did that should be brought to justice. And and both of those things hand in hand, well, hopefully if we keep saying these words and keep reaching out to people, Europe hopefully will become a safer place for our children mm-hmm. and for our survivors. So on that note, let's go back to Malta. You're going to chase a fly here.
Yeah,
while Stego's going to chase a fly that's trapped in a bone, we're going to go back and hear from Chabob.
All right. See you soon.
So, Chabob.
Chabob.
You're here with me in
Sunny Malta.
Sunny Malta. I always have that pause when I think, what country am I in now? Yeah, so you've been here for a week, and yeah, how have you found the road to change? That's a random question.
It's been interesting so far.
Yeah.
We quite like Malta.
We do.
It's nice and sunny. I think, yeah, it's been interesting to learn more about the road to change being here rather than just kind of reading about it. I think that's been quite useful.
Has it surprised you what we do?
Yes. I think more, it's more real, isn't it? I think when someone says I'm going to go and walk 16,000 miles, you just sort of think,
yeah,
you know, that's great, but there's not any reality to it. There's not any reality of what they're doing.
Yeah.
Whereas when you, like, obviously meeting Amanda and seeing what she does to set everything up and then what you're doing with the walking and the going to all the meetings,
yeah,
you get so much more sense of the reality of it.
Yeah.
And the time that it's taking you guys to do it.
Yeah.
Like the commitment.
I think what's been difficult for me this week is that everyone around us is on holiday. I mean, you're here on holiday.
Yes.
You've scheduled your annual family vacation to coincide with me. And so that's lovely, but I think it's weird to be here when literally all the British and Scottish people around me are all on vacation. They're all in flip-flops and sunglasses, and I'm literally wearing walking boots and a kilt, and I'm,
yeah,
you know, trying not to slip out of work mode because that's not why I'm here, you know.
No, but I think you haven't then done that though.
No.
You stayed, people have met you here, but I think, like you said, with hindsight, you probably should have.
Actually, try to relax.
That, or stay in town.
Stay in town.
Where,
yeah,
you wouldn't have encountered so many of those people.
Yeah.
But
it's a tiny island though, I mean.
That's the problem.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of money in taxis this week because we've, you know, it's just been, we're not near the centre of the letter.
No.
I'm always happy to walk, but Amanda's like filming and stuff, and
walk,
6 kilometres for me is like, you know, it's just, yeah, a walk, it's just an hour, and then I realise for most people that's quite a distance.
Yeah, no, so she's got equipment and everything, hasn't,
yeah,
she, with her,
so,
all the time.
That's been an expense because,
and I guess that's the difficulty of doing it, isn't it, is that you have never been to these countries before.
No.
So you have no idea what you're going to get when you get there.
Yeah.
There's not any preparation to know.
The thing is, very often we're heading to a government meeting, right? We don't know what the building looks like. We don't know the name of the street. We have the name of the street in English, but the name of the street is whatever. It's either in Greek or Maltese or, you know. And so we're heading somewhere. We don't know where we're going. Never been before. We don't even know how to say the name of the street we're going to. So if it's, and especially, you don't want to be late for a government meeting. So we often take a taxi to a meeting because that way you can ask the taxi driver and the locals.
Absolutely.
They'll take you to where it is. Because you would hope in a country this size that it would all be centralised. It's not. I met the commissioner the other day. It was miles from Valletta.
Yeah.
And she has this really peaceful ancient building, which was lovely, but I would never have found it on my own.
No, and also I think that you need to that's a massively important part of what you're doing.
Yeah.
I know the walking is about trying to get the attention of people,
yeah,
but it's the meetings that are going to make the changes you want to make.
Yeah.
So you can't rock up late to them.
It can never be late. If a foreign government gives me their attention, you know, then obviously we take it extremely seriously. But, yeah.
I think as well that it's important I don't think that's as easily recognised when you're just kind of reading your stuff on Facebook or whatever, or, you know, reading your blog, that understanding that actually everywhere you go, you've got not a clue what you're going to encounter there. Like what the terrain's going to be like, what the weather's going to be like. You know, okay, you can get stuff off the internet. But actually, I read up loads about Malta before I came here. Loads of it wasn't right.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like saying it was really expensive, and although some of it is in comparison to other European countries, it isn't.
Yeah.
And so you think, well, actually, it's difficult to get the right kind of information before you get there.
I know. See, I've got used to that feeling of being lost. I've got really used to it. I'm comfortable with that feeling of I don't know where I am and I don't know where I'm supposed to be. You know what I mean? Because, like, and I've kind of been lost so many times when, like, I'm walking down the road, and because I've never seen the road before.
No.
Any road. I've been doing this for a year, so I've been lost so many times that I don't panic when that, because I always know I'll be okay. You know what I mean? I'm not lost in, you know, the desert. I'm lost, and if I was really stuck, I could tap on a door, and no matter what language, I could probably communicate that I'm lost, you know. If it's rural Malta and some guy knocks on your door in a kilt, he's obviously lost. So he's probably going to help him out.
I think as well, like that conversation that we were having today, this morning with Amanda, about what she's going to do and where she's going to stay when you get
to Sicily
tonight,
yeah.
I don't think people have any understanding of that either.
Yeah.
I don't think they realise that you're not, this isn't raising money
no.
for some kind of thing. It's
not,
raising money to do it. It's
yeah.
just an ongoing thing of people need to give money in order that you can carry on.
Yeah.
In order that you can have the basics to survive. It's not like you're doing anything luxurious. You know, she's trying to go to some stranger's house to sleep on their sofa.
Yeah.
And my immediate thought is,
Yeah.
Okay, you can't do that. You don't know these people.
Well, Couchsurfing like, is one of the things. It's an official website.
But people don't realise that.
Yeah,
people
exactly.
People don't realise that that's what you guys are doing, I don't think. And they realise that she's obviously going ahead to do all of this other stuff that needs to be done.
Yeah.
It's really important for you to get those meetings, mm-hmm. to make those changes of why you're doing the whole road to change thing. And actually, in the meantime, she's got to try and find somewhere as cheap as possible
yeah.
or free to mm-hmm. stay
yeah.
in that time. I don't think, I hadn't considered any of that stuff.
Yeah.
That she's that's a different role that yeah. she has to do.
It's like the Stiggle who drives the follow vehicle. He just messaged me just now, and he needs me to give him money so he can get the ferry from Italy to Sicily.
Yeah.
And so that, I mean, how do you get there? And then once I get tonight, I'll get a walk off the boat in Sicily, and I'll start walking to Rome. But obviously, we need to pay for the boat to get from Sicily back on Italy, and that's yeah. another 100 quid. And then there's diesel and stuff like that. So, you know, it's just a constant expense. But I think for the we've reached millions of people in 23 languages.
For not very much money.
For 20 grand.
Yeah.
And three people. And all we do is we eat and we sleep as cheaply as possible. You know, Stig and I sleep in the van. And Amanda sleeps on couches. And we just kind of make our way around Europe trying to implement change. And from what's happened this week in Malta, you know, we got right up to the heads of government. And we got, you know, a nice little words of encouragement from the president and stuff. So
I think as well that people that are sharing stuff on Facebook or who are listening to the blog or who are reading your, not listening to this podcast yeah. and reading the blogs and stuff, they need to understand and need to be telling other people, because I didn't understand till now, what they're giving their money for.
Yeah.
So that it can keep going to make the change yeah. as opposed to, like, you know, you give money to, like, breast cancer awareness or whatever. That's what they're giving it for. They're giving it to raise awareness of the issue and to make these yeah. legal changes. I think people don't grasp that properly.
Because of the Just Giving page, people think I'm raising money for the Moira Anderson Foundation.
Yeah, or Stop the Silence or something.
Yeah, but what we're doing is we're raising the money that people donate pays for, you know, like a tank of diesel so yeah. we can keep going, or it pays for, I'm supposed to eat 5,000 calories a day. And that's, we can't afford to do that. And that's why I've lost 2 stone. You know what I mean? And so we're doing the best we can with what we've got, but I'm kind of disappointed in myself that we've not managed to secure any sort of corporate support. We've been doing this for a year now. We can point to a whole bunch of change that we've created from individuals across Europe, and also from some national legislative change that our little project has pushed, and the fact that, you know, haven't done that, we haven't got enough money to get to Rome, but we're going to start walking anyway and hope that we get there.
I think as well that that's about somebody being brave, isn't it? It's like the conversation we had the other day about someone needs to be brave to take this particular issue
yeah.
and put their name against it.
Well, I have, but I don't have any money to put behind it.
No, but somebody who has the money.
Yeah.
And I think people, you know, are frightened of this particular issue.
Yeah.
They fear it for whatever reason.
But that's
whereas actually
exactly.
takes those brave people, doesn't it, to say, I'm going to put my name against that, I'm going to give money yeah. to this, and I don't care. And you can think whatever you like, and you can make assumptions about me or whatever,
yeah.
but actually I'm going to be brave and be courageous and say that I would support this and not pretend that it... The problem is, I guess, the very name, you know, the very fact of what we're trying to do is stop the silence and stop child sexual abuse. That very fact grows into adulthood. People are still silent.
Mm.
And not just survivors. You know, yeah. everybody's silent about this issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, well, you know, when people talk about it, people feel embarrassed or they don't know what to say. So I guess that's where people aren't able to, like, feel they can publicly make big donations or sponsor it, which is what people should have done.
Mm.
Whereas well, I guess...
I mean, like, I'd be very proud if we managed to make it back to Edinburgh having never got any sponsorships, and we've just made it on... There's so many kind people who now support the project, who have done incredible fundraising events, and... you know, so the support we've had and we've gotten this far purely on the kind donations of many strangers, people I didn't know before the project, who now, you know, I'm a regular contact with, and that's really, it's kind of and keeps us going literally, and but, you know, in our spirits as well, we're so kind of encouraged by the warm response we've had. But again, you know, I'm sitting here in Malta tonight, we've already paid for the boat so we can get to Sicily, but, you know, the next 8 months I've got 5,000 miles to walk, another 10 countries to go through, and at the moment I don't know how we're going to do it, but I know we will do it, I just don't know how.
Yeah, and yet 1,000 people gave 10 quid, you've made your money.
Yeah.
And actually, I've got 200 friends on Facebook and they've all got 200.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? That's what I find so frustrating about this.
Yeah.
That's what I find so frustrating is that, like, something like Facebook, you know what I mean, it's not difficult to reach 1,000 people, and okay, some people don't have a tenner,
yeah,
but loads do. I mean, loads do. You know what I mean? Don't buy that packet of fags that now costs you £9.
Yeah.
You know, don't buy those 2 pints of beer and just give the £10. I feel like that thing, you know, Bob Geldof when he banged on the table.
People are dying now.
Yeah.
Bang! Don't go to the pub. You know, it's that thing of like, just don't go to the pub.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, to that. And so, that's the frustration, I think, is that is those networks are huge.
Yeah.
Now, you know, the internet makes that huge. So even if only 10 people give off my page, give a tenner, but 10 people give off all those other 200 pages that it goes to, then you've just done it.
Yeah.
And that's my frustration. Is, you know, they don't really need to be ashamed if they can only give £3, just give me bloody money.
I know, it's like, maybe we should make more videos of the state of the van, or...
Yes.
You know, the size of
the
suitcase.
Yeah, or the places you're staying.
And people say, this is what we're lugging around, you know, and, yeah.
Yeah.
So just to say, like, because no one owes us anything, but we
and
are...
And the fact that you haven't, Amanda has worn the same clothes all week.
Yeah, exactly. I brought one bag of clothes, I've literally have two blue
t-shirts.
Well,
that's what
you're
saying, there's no space, because you can't bring loads of clothes, you know, so it's like, just, it's not some kind of luxury European trip.
No, and that's my anxiety, is that people donate money and they think we're over here drinking and partying. And you know what I mean? Because when you're in Malta at this time of year, everyone's like, oh, that's nice. You get the public to pay for you to go to Malta for a week. I'm like, just examine our schedule and you'll see. Yeah.
And I can obviously vouch for the fact that the luxuries you've had this week I've paid for. So
exactly, yeah. Rachel's brought us out for dinner a couple of times, which has been awesome.
It's like, you know, you don't, that's just rubbish. And I think as well, that is the thing, is I just think, just, you know, give a fiver. You know, everybody, if every single person that we all knew individually, of those 2,000 people, you know, it's a lot of money that would enable you to do it.
Well, I know we only need about, I don't know, 15 grand to get home or something.
Yeah,
it's just like something that the van, the insurance on the van is €1,700, and that's because of the nature of the project and because we have multiple drivers.
But that's the point, isn't it? That's 1,500 people give £10.
Yeah,
it's not a huge amount of people.
So yeah, if you felt at all guilty from that guilt trip, we
it's your name.
And if you
don't so tight.
If you support the Road to Change, if you're listening to this, I know you're one of the people who's got an idea of what we're doing and what we're trying to do. And like you say, no one owes us anything, but we're doing the best we can with what we've got. And if you know someone who you think will help us, then please share our podcasts, or you know. Put them onto our website and they can see what it is we're trying to do here, because genuinely the three of us don't live in any sort of luxury, but we are trying to do this for the benefit of all children in the EU and survivors in the EU. It's not just, you know, we're not sometimes I wonder if people think I'm walking for male survivors, but I'm not.
No, for all survivors,
you know, all survivors.
And actually, if any of you have got to listen to it and have got children, actually you do owe these people something, because actually they're trying to keep your children and my children and all the other children on the planet safer. You know, and for those children who experience that, if they can be a bit safer because of this, then the whole world owes something for that. They do.
Well, the reason I wanted to get you on the podcast, and the reason you're here, Jabal...
It's obviously to guilt these people.
It's not to guilt the listeners. No, it's because in the journey of me being a survivor, you're very significant in my story. And... Cue tears.
Cue the weepy bit.
No, it's just that I've written, if anyone's read my blogs, I talk about, you know, I was abused by my uncle, I went through high school. At age 17, I ran away from home. Now, I didn't what's his name, Dick Whittington, you know, just get a cat and a little nap.
A hanky.
Yeah, on the end of a stick. No, I got a job in Wolverhampton and with a youth theatre for underprivileged kids. And that was the thing, I got offered that opportunity, but I would have taken anything. I had to get out of the environment I was in because I needed to get away from the situation. Looking back, I didn't even consciously run away, but you know, at the time I didn't realise that's what I was doing. But I was on the run, I had to get away from the situation. I was still, my uncle was there, no one was talking about what happened, I needed to get out of there. Went to Wolverhampton on the first, you know, on the first day I think I met you, Jabal.
You did?
And thing was, you need to understand, in my life I had never told anyone what my uncle had done. I'd never even said out loud to myself or anyone ever what had happened. And suddenly I met you, and you worked also in that youth theatre.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, we took the kids to see a show. It was a West Side Story. We took all the children in the youth theatre to see a production of West Side Story, because we both worked there. We dropped the kids off at their houses. And then Chibob, I'm calling her Chibob, her name's Rachel, long story. Anyway, Chibob then says, do you want to go for a curry?
Went to the substandard
in Wolverhampton. And then that was it, we just started talking, and then I heard myself tell you the story, and I don't remember how you did it, but you definitely knew that I needed some sort of help. And looking back, I always think that you altered the course of my life, because I was quite suicidal at that point. I had this kind of plan that I was going to just get as far away from my family as I could, you know, so that they would forget about me and then I'd kill myself.
I didn't know that though at the time, which probably made it easier for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think I knew when you told the story that it was difficult,
mm-hmm.
obviously, like horrendous. I didn't know two things at the time. I didn't know I was the first person you'd ever told.
Mm-hmm.
In that moment, I know I did quite quickly afterwards, but in the moment that you told me and I responded,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know. I obviously had some empathy from that because of my own survivor journey, so that was another thing
mm-hmm.
that probably helped. And I don't know whether this, you know, people say if you put 100 people in a room, that certain people, you know, like only children will migrate together and eldest children will migrate together and people who've had similar psychological experience will migrate together without ever speaking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether you subliminally knew, I don't think you knew, but subconsciously whether you knew something about me that I exuded some kind of thing that you could see
mm-hmm.
without knowing you could see it, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So you knew if you told me it would be all right because I had had a similar experience. Not similar, but similar mm-hmm. enough.
Similar enough.
So I think that kind of maybe was why. But also I didn't know that you were suicidal. I think if I'd known that, that would have been a much, not different conversation, but much more difficult. Because then you're really paranoid. As a person receiving the information,
yeah.
you're really much more concerned, aren't you? Because you're thinking, shit, this person's like suicidal. I better not say anything that's,
yeah.
that could tip them because I'm going to feel responsible or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think at the time, I suppose I just responded in a way that... I had been responding to when it was me who told that story for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as well, in a way that you hope somebody would respond to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always that fear, isn't there, as a survivor, that you're going to tell the story and people are going to do that thing that people do where they either kind of shuffle their papers because they're not really quite sure
mm-hmm.
what to say because there's all of this, like, myth and kind of, you know, just rubbish that surrounds people who've had these experiences. And I think... you don't want that to be, you don't want to make the person feel like you're going to be that person that's going to kind of do that paper shuffling thing or look down or mm-hmm. like act like. Mm-hmm. Because actually, as a survivor, you fear that the person's going to blame you
mm-hmm.
because you've blamed yourself for years.
Mm-hmm.
So you fear that when you start to tell people, they're going to think that it was your fault because you think that it was your fault.
Yeah, and that anxiety, I mean, I remember saying it and then hearing myself having said it and then thinking, are you even going to believe what I've just said?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Are you, yeah. Do you think it's true?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is, because you just, survivors maybe just assume they'll never be believed, so maybe that's why they never tell anyone.
Yeah, that's definitely, and I think there's also this, for some reason, I don't know how, whether it's abusers that do this or whether it's just life or what it is, but there's this thing that surrounds survivors, which is somehow you're going to think it was me, like I deserved it,
mm.
like I must have done something,
mm-hmm.
and that's what happened to me,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to actually... you're a victim of an abusive person.
Yeah.
And yet, if I sat here now and we were talking about domestic violence and I said to you, you know, that the women obviously come out of domestic violence relationships feeling that they deserve to get hit by their husbands, that's really well understood.
Yeah.
Much more, I think. I think with child sexual abuse, there's kind of a thing that when you tell somebody that fear that they're going to think that it was you,
mm-hmm.
that you somehow asked for it or you, all the stuff that you feel is still so prevalent in survivors of sexual abuse, which is,
mm.
I think, about the fact that people still don't talk about it. It's also tied up together, you know, we're so much better at talking about domestic violence. It's a huge campaign in the UK of the kind of two couples
mm-hmm.
sat at the dining table, you know, all smiling on one side and the other guy's going, to punch it and it says, don't ignore it.
Mm.
But yeah, we haven't got as far, I don't think anywhere in the EU, as far with sexual abuse. We haven't got as far as to say, actually,
yeah.
this is something we're just going to talk about completely openly. And for me, that's what Road to Change is about.
Mm.
Although I know it's about changing laws, it's also about saying, this is something that we should be campaigning against, like stop child sexual abuse, the NSPCC campaign, all that stuff. It's all very nice and a green dot and all that stuff, that's great. It's not graphic enough.
Yeah.
It's not punching. You know, we don't put like domestic violence posters up or child neglect posters up.
Mm.
You know, we put the kid weeping in a cot
mm.
on TV saying nobody's gonna come home to this kid tonight and he's gonna cry all night and anybody watching that who feels remotely human finds that really difficult.
Mm.
We don't say somebody's going to get in bed with this kid tonight, mm-hmm. and they're going to do these things to him, or yeah. her, or whoever. Yeah. That's what they need to do.
Yeah.
And for me, that's what Register Change is about. It's not about, it is about the stuff you're doing about the law, but it's also about...
Well, there's three prongs to it. There's the political, there's the awareness, and absolutely. Then there's the NGO. So there is actually three prongs. So yeah.
There needs to be that feeling that for people 10 years from now, who go to the theatre together and they have a curry and one's a survivor and so does the other one, but they don't know, mm-hmm. and they sit down and one tells the other their story, mm-hmm. that person doesn't feel that shame. Mm-hmm. That there is places for them to go. Mm-hmm. That it's not still this hidden... It's like a hidden abuse still, I think.
It's what I struggle with is... because I'm going around and I'm talking about this issue and I'm trying to be really calm about talking about it. You know.
Good luck with that.
I know, and it's like, I can very... If I meet... Because I have absolutely no diplomatic training. You know, I catch myself and go, hang on, I'm a survivor and I'm also Scottish.
And you're human.
And I'm human. And sometimes I meet journalists or you know, particular individuals, authorities that I meet and their opinion is so polar opposite of where I'm coming from. I have to catch myself and go, you know, just meet them where they are and try and have a discussion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Try and have a discussion. Because if I just blow up and go and throw the table over and go, you have no idea what has to change. You know what I mean? Like Bob Geldof starts stamping my fist. I think that would just shut down, you know, they would shut down and not actually have the conversation. So I have to, I've became very patient in my, you know, and by not reacting to some stuff.
And I think in some ways that's right. And I'm not the best person to talk about diplomacy, as you are now. but I also think there's a place for banging the table.
No, I know, but there's the journalist last week in Cyprus, and he said to me, what did your uncle do to you?
I remember this.
I know, and I said, you know, he regularly sexually abused me. And he looked at me and went, yeah, but what did he do to you? And I was like, so what for me was then, there's that thing about the press, and the press really want to just look for a sensational thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I could tell you, you know, and I did. I kind of gave him some highlights, as it were. And I was like, and it's so
Which is just so wrong on so many levels.
I was like, you know, it's so undignified for me to have to sit here with a journalist and tell him so that he's got the mental image of, so we're reliving the whole thing. And I was like,
why do we need to do that?
Why do we need to do that? And why do you need to know those things? Because if you don't know what child sexual abuse is, and that's what frightened me. I was like, is this guy just really, you know, voyeuristically curious about what happened
to me?
Or
is he naive?
Or is he genuinely naive? Yeah. Is there places where the people... Because we say 1 in 4 girls, 1 in 6 boys.
Yeah.
That means that 3 out of 4 girls don't know. They really don't know.
No, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? And 5 out of 6 boys have no idea what you're talking about. So he might be one of these people who's never... Obviously, he's met survivors, but he doesn't know they're survivors. And he doesn't know what this is. And he's just like, so what did he do to you? What it could be honest.
What does sexual abuse mean?
Yeah.
By that kind of thing.
So what qualifies as sexual abuse? And the thing is, there is places where it's so not discussed that they really don't know. They're looking at you blankly in the face. But I don't know where that guy was you know, so.
I think the problem is, isn't it, is that the problem for the person on the other end of that conversation, so if that had been me,
yeah,
I would have thought, well, A, WTF, why do you want to know that?
Yeah.
Why do you want that detail?
Yeah.
But I'd also be thinking, why do you not believe me? Do you know, you think I'm on some kind of weird, like...
Do you want details to prove what I'm saying?
Yeah. And also I think as well that's part of the problem, isn't it? Because if I said to you, I'm going to work for a domestic abuse charity, you'd know exactly what that meant.
Yeah.
I don't know whether people don't understand. And I think the other, you know, the whole... But I think the whole way that we're currently, like, reporting sexual abuse isn't particularly helpful. Because it's obviously everywhere in the media over, like, all the stuff that's going on, certainly in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where it's reported isn't always helpful, because I guess it's a whole gamut of stuff
mm-hmm.
that is all very different. It can be very, very different. And actually, we shouldn't be measuring that either. But I'm not sure about asking somebody for detail, I think.
What annoys me is that, for me, it was... I've walked all this way to talk about child sexual abuse. And then I was in a position where I was like, actually, yeah, you've asked me a question. I've said, let's talk about these things. And I'm like, I can't suddenly go, actually, I'd rather not talk about it.
But actually, there's a difference, isn't there, between saying, I want to watch childhood sexual abuse and I'm happy to say I'm a survivor.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you the graphic detail. I mean, yeah. I don't mean to be funny. If somebody said to me, do you have sex with your husband? I'd probably say yes. I might not, depending on who they were. I might say no, just to see the reaction. However, then said, what do you do? I'd be like...
Yeah.
sorry, everybody's podcast, face expressions.
Sorry, you can swear it's a podcast.
I'd be like, what?
Yeah.
Why are you asking me that?
Yeah.
That's none of your business. And actually, in the same way, that's none of their business either.
Yeah.
I think it's enough for somebody to have to say, And actually, if we want people to come forward and say, this is what's happened to me, yeah. and the response is going to be, well, could you tell me exactly?
Yeah, that's not for
us. People aren't going to come forward.
Exactly. So is that kind of undignified invasion of your most intimate violations that you've ever experienced?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because if somebody like beat me up in the street and then someone said, well, what exactly did they do? I wouldn't really want to relive it in the same way that I don't want to relive that.
That's the thing, because people are really inspired by me, that they tell me they're inspired by me, that I can talk about these issues. And I'm like, well, to be honest, when I stand up in front of the podium at some, you know, some parliament, I'm not in my head visualising every act. I just say, the scuttling around the details, like and that's the thing, and that's not saying I'm mentally removed from it, but I'm not re-traumatised by it, but it gets uncomfortable when I have to...
The reason people get help and get counselling and therapy and support to overcome it is so that they learn how to not relive it.
Yeah, yeah.
But some part of that involves not reliving it.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. What I'll do now is I'll sit down and I'll...
Yeah.
You know, it's just a completely inappropriate thing to do.
Yeah. So, and what's happening is, you know, most survivors, there's me making a sweeping generalisation about, 2 billion people now. They assume, because of the way the media goes hysterical about it, they think if they make a report, then their entire life will be in the newspapers. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case. You can actually go and make a report and, you'll be protected.
Absolutely.
Your name will never be in the paper. If you're listening to this and you haven't come forward because you're scared that you have to, have these really intimate invasions into your privacy, then honestly, that doesn't happen. That only happens to me because I waived my anonymity and I chose to go out there and speak to all the world's press.
Absolutely.
This was my choice. So.
And also, for some people, there's different ways of coming forward.
Yeah.
Some people will come forward as in they'll go and get help,
mm-hmm.
but they won't necessarily prosecute
make
the person that did it to them. And again, people have to do what they have to do to get through their life, don't they?
Of course, yeah.
But I think you're right. I think there is a massive assumption that, if you come forward, you're going to have, especially at the moment, it's going to be everywhere and you're going to be able, everyone's going to know everything about your life, and that isn't true.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is survivors are not trying to make money. They're not trying to, you might, depending on what country you're in, you might be entitled to compensation, criminal damages compensation. That doesn't equate to what's happened to you.
Well, it doesn't really compensate, does it?
Of course, exactly. It's just a gesture, which may or may not give you some sense of peace. But the reason I would encourage anyone to prosecute is because that child who, the person who abused you as a child might still be in contact
Absolutely.
With children.
And that's really important.
And even if you think you're not strong enough to stand in a courtroom with them, ask yourself, am I stronger as an adult with, whatever psychological trauma you've experienced, are you stronger as an adult than the child, that person, might abuse tonight or tomorrow or next year because you didn't break your silence. So, and
also,
I know it's horrible.
When you come forward, people may come and say that it was them too.
Exactly.
You're not alone.
You could inspire and encourage others to come forward. If you make that report, you could help someone in their healing. And
there's support. In some countries, there's support for people who come forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people will be supported through that process.
So,
and that's important.
But it's about stopping this. It's about, and we're going to stop it by all working, supporting each other, and being brave, and stepping forward and saying, this person did this to me, and that person has to be stopped. And until we all, just get a bit braver, I don't think it's going to change very much.
We all have to get braver, don't we? Survivors have to get braver. Non-survivors have to get braver. Famous people have to get braver. People who have money need to get braver. People need to stamp their this is who I am, and I'm going to support this.
Yeah.
Instead of this time, and I'll support all those really kind of easy charities that don't make me feel like it's something that's kind of a little bit over there.
I was told, actually, if I changed the name of the walk to the walk to protect the children, or the walk to, save the children, something generic about, because everyone wants to get on board with protect kids. Let's protect the kids, of course we will. As soon as I say the words child sexual abuse, across my chest, stop child sexual abuse across my chest, and then companies are scared to have the logo next to it. But that's exactly why I'm walking. I'm like, we have to be able to talk about this. It's like, if you take that away, we'll give you money. No, I can't raise awareness about something without being allowed to talk about
Absolutely.
It. It's like, that's mental.
And also, the other thing as well, isn't it, is that's just perpetuating what's gone on for all this time,
mm-hmm.
which is, let's not really talk about this because it's something that happens that we can't actually psychologically process as human beings because it's so wrong. Therefore, we'll just not talk about it.
But it's that thing of what, 30 years ago, if you said cancer, the room would freeze.
Absolutely.
And now you say cancer and everyone understands what that is and what has to happen.
What's that film where she whispers it? She's got cancer. She's got cancer. I love that film where the mum whispers all the really bad words.
Is it?
I can't wait for the movie.
Well, yeah, so hopefully we can make that journey, and it won't take 3 decades before people can see them sexually abused without everyone panicking.
or looking like, I don't know how to respond.
Yeah.
I think there is all that. Makes people nervous.
So,
we need to change some myths as well.
It's been awesome having you here, Chabot, because you are, for me, you and I drop in and drop out of each other's lives, like, every 6 to 12 months.
Never normally this long,
no. But we just appear and we kind of have a deep and meaningful long chat for two days and then we disappear again.
Yeah.
And it's been so perfect and surreal at the same time to have you here at what feels like the halfway point, because it was a year ago. Tomorrow, we're recording this early because I need to leave and go to Sicily tonight, but tomorrow we'll put this podcast out. So it was a year ago today, as you're listening to this, that I left London. And that is just surreal. I mean, I knew I'd still be walking a year later, but it's mental.
It seems like a lifetime.
Yeah. I mean,
in other ways, it seems like it.
And you just flew here from you flew here from London, and it took you 3 hours.
Yeah.
And it's taken me 12 months. 12 months via Helsinki.
Just to get to Malta.
Yeah, just to get to Malta. I was like, yeah. It's those moments where I go, "What am I doing?" You know, and then I remember all the faces of the survivors that I met, and all the politicians who looked at me and went, "I agree with you." And
you know, absolutely.
I can say categorically, with the exception of one government, that every government I've spoken to in the last 22 countries, everyone who's let me talk has agreed with my logic and has agreed that the statute of limitations is a child protection issue. And so, you know, only a very small few of those authorities that I've met have actually began the process of implementing that change. And that's why I'm confident.
They need time for that, then.
They need time, of course, but I think that's why I'm confident if I go to the European Parliament, you know, I might need to collect 1 million signatures, but the fact that everyone is kind of on board with the concept, it's not like I'm saying we should ban, I don't know, tuna, I don't know, something stupid that everyone's like, what do you mean? You know, that's insane. Why would you want to do that? You'd have to really convince people as to why Venus is important. This is such an obvious, when you look at the facts and look at the situation in every country, all the ministers I've met in every country go, well, okay, I see. Yeah, I completely agree with you. And then I walk away and look back a couple of weeks later and go, have they done it? Have you done it yet?
Quick!
Keep tweeting them and poking them, like, come on.
I think the thing is that sometimes it's just that people don't think about this stuff.
No.
Until someone says, hello.
Yeah, and that's the thing, that when I started walking a year ago, I was going to go to the governments and raise the age of consent and also the statute of limitations, get that abolished. And what I've seen as I've walked is actually that's spreading your focus like that. A government's like, well, what else do you want to change? Who are you? Who's this guy in a kilt telling me how to run my country? And we've narrowed it down to a finite argument, and it's this is what we want to change.
Yeah, and actually,
for the awareness stuff and the press, it's all about raising awareness and destigmatising the issue.
And actually, the problem with the raising of the age of consent is that queries a lot of things anyway, because people don't understand what consent is.
Yeah, exactly. And but the age of consent is 13 in Spain, you know what I mean?
But it's criminal. You know, if somebody does something to somebody that they don't want done to them, it's criminal.
Yeah.
So I think it sometimes blurs everybody's lines. People just need to understand what consent actually looks like. It would help.
Yeah.
Because they don't.
Well, unfortunately, I've got to go. Fortunately, I've got to go and have a meeting with the Minister of Social Affairs here in Malta. So I'm going to have to wrap this up. But Chabot, thank you so much for saving my life.
I didn't save your life. You saved your own life.
Well,
I made a great life. You've made a great life. I'm very proud of you. You've made a wonderful life. You've done some great things. I didn't save your life. I was just in the right place at the right time.
I don't think I'd be sitting here in Malta if you hadn't been there, went on my path that day.
Well, that's a relief then, isn't it, for everybody?
I might be here in Malta, but I'd be, you know, I mean, I'd be one of those club reps. One of these, you know, I'd be 31-year-old. I'd be like, right, everyone, we're going to party again.
Come in for a free drink.
Follow me. So I'm not saying that people who do that job, which is wonderful, and I'm sure they're great at their job, I'm not saying they've lost their way in life.
But it wouldn't be for you.
It wouldn't be for me.
Not at 31.
Yeah, no.
There's a limit to those things.
Absolutely. Well, okay. Any final words to Bob?
I've had a great time. It's been great to know more about it. Give you money to Road to Change quickly. They need it. They need to get to the end. It's really important. So just, you know, I don't know, buy a cheaper soap. Buy a cheaper cleanser. Don't buy perfume that month. Cut down on the fag you smoke. Don't go to the pub. Don't take your kids to McDonald's that Saturday. Whatever, just give your money. Just give £10. whatever you've got, just give your motor rate of change.
And we're back.
Chabob, honestly, I can't articulate how much I love Chabob. She is just... I wish everyone who's ever... Not just everyone who's alive, but everyone especially who's been a victim of something could have someone like Chabob in their life, and the world would be a better place. But here we are, so we're going to get back on the road.
Yep.
I've got 5,000 miles and I've got 8 months
1,000 kilometres, 600 miles to Rome. So,
yeah.
It'll take a while.
And But we wouldn't be here without your support. Thank you so much for supporting The Road to Change. Hang on. Forgot about our producer, Tom Urie.
Oh, lovely Tom.
Sorry, Tom. I couldn't... I mean, I would sneak you in at the end there, Tommy. Listen, Tom produces this podcast, but also Tom... I lived in London when I had the idea to do The Road to Change, and Tom, who's my best friend, he lives in Glasgow. He's a national treasure, and if you're not from Scotland, he's one of the most well-loved and most talented actors and musicians, and he's just in the UK we're lucky to have Tommy, but I'm lucky to have him as my best friend. And he invited me back up to Scotland to live in his house rent free. I lived in his house for a year so that I could work unpaid for a year to set up The Road to Change, and that's the guy that's producing this podcast. So thank you, Tommy.
And he's invited me just out with
he's invited to stick out to stay with him when we get back.
It's so great. Yeah.
So I'm sure there's somebody listening to this that's raging that I haven't thanked him personally, but I promise you there's thousands of people.
You're all in all of our hearts. So.
You're not yet. Yeah. And please understand that if you have shared a post that we've put up, if you have donated a single penny to Road to Change, if you're listening to this now, we are grateful to you, because what you're part of and what you're helping contribute to is change. Change that's going to change Europe for the benefit of kids now today, for survivors today, and for the benefit of millions of kids. Millions of kids
millions
in the future.
Of kids, yeah.
And on that note, let's just say thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
The Road to Change is a project organised and supported by The Road to Change. Not The Road to Change. The Stop the Silence, Stop Child Sexual Abuse, in partnership with the Moira Anderson Foundation in Edinburgh. If you want to help us get all the way back to Edinburgh, please visit roadtochange.eu and donate, because we have no corporate support and we are not sure at this point how we're going to finish the project. So please donate, even 50p. You can probably afford that. Tell me you can. And you'll be part of something that's...
it's going to be huge when it's all done.
Yeah.
It is huge now, but it will be even bigger.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
We forgot Poland, Stiggle.
Forgot Poland.
I knew that would happen if I started listing all the countries.
It's a disgrace. How could I forget Poland?
I thought I would forget someone. I didn't think I would forget an entire country. Okay. There are so many people in Poland we want to thank, but you know who you are, especially Marina in Warsaw, who gave us our house for the week, and the gorgeous people in Strzelin, Christina, and your mum and dad. Yeah. We're thinking of you, and thank you so much for everything you've done for us. And Sanjay in Glasgow.
Yeah,
Sanjay, of course.
Yeah. I haven't met you yet, but I will soon.
You'll meet Stiggle in 8 months when I've walked another 5,000 miles. Anyway, go to roadtochange.eu and please donate. Please donate, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much.